This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a romantic musical, a Shakespearean cabaret, or a clowning escapade, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Love blossoms between pen pals as Summer Lyric Theater at Tulane continues its season with the award-winning musical She Loves Me. The work, which has been adapted several times, is based on Miklos Laszlo's 1937 play Parfumery. Joining me in studio are artistic director Michael McKelvey and cast members Richard Arnold and Dodie Piper. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You know, this musical is one that I wasn't familiar with until I learned it was adapted in the late 1990s as the film You've Got Mail.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, Michael, how did you come to choose it?
She Loves Me has always been one of my favorite shows, and I didn't realize that there were a lot of people that didn't know the show. I've always known the songs from it. First of all, She Loves Me, Tonight at 8, Vanilla Ice Cream, things like that. And these have become standards in the musical theater repertoire. I'm just used to hearing singers sing all the hits from the show, but no one really produces it, or it's not produced that frequently. The interesting thing is, the more we post about it on social media, all these people chime in and just say, there's this love affair with the show. And I'm saying, well, if everyone loves it, then how come no one does it? And I think it's because it's a small, intimate, people call it like the jewel box musical or the music box musical. It's just like the sweet little present. It doesn't bowl you over with big production numbers. I mean, there's a few, but it's a fantastic book, and it's a story with heart, and it does have this phenomenal score by Harnack and Bach, who also wrote Fiddler on the Roof, and it's just terrific.
And Richard and Tony, what attracted you to this work?
I love the description of it as a jewel box, because I do think it's so intimate and so genuine and so relatable. All the characters, you really, really get to know them and you really feel for each one of them. And because it's not performed that often, it really does feel like it's a treasure that needs to be safeguarded. I feel sort of an obligation to do it justice because it's such a beautiful, sweet show.
When I saw it posted for the audition, I found the revival copy on Amazon and I watched it. And I was like, this is the most perfect musical I've ever seen. The music is so well written. It captures a whole wide range of musical types and different voices and different characters. And then when you get into the script, I mean, every line is just perfectly crafted. There is not a flaw in the music or in the book.
Yeah, we were rehearsing lines and I kept throwing in extra words. And I kept realizing, no, it's every word is so carefully chosen and very succinct and, you know, just perfect in so many ways.
So tell us about your characters.
So I play George Novak. He's a cheerful store clerk who is smitten by his anonymous pen pal. And at the time when Amalia enters, things start to sort of fall apart in his life a little bit, and he's clearly frustrated by that loss of control. And I think Amalia feels some of the effects of his frustrations.
And Dodie, you play Amalia?
I do. I ruin his life, at least at the beginning. And then I make his life so much better. She's looking for a job because her previous store just closed and she knows the perfumery business inside and out and she wants to work for Marichex. And she goes in and just kind of makes a mess of everything because she's very sure of herself. And it's, we were talking about this too. It was written, set in the 30s. And to have a woman, you know, getting her own job and fighting for herself was kind of unusual in those days. And she was very sure of herself. And I think that that makes her a really great role model in a lot of ways, especially for the current age that we live in, to see a woman in the 30s really kind of pushing for her own rights.
Now, this was set in the 30s, and I believe in Hungary.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
It made its Broadway debut in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. Tell us how the romantic comedy unfolds.
Well, most of the first act, the audience is, I think, clearly aware that George and Amalia are smitten for each other. But we are the only ones that are not aware. At least we profess not to be aware. The audience, you know, learns more and more hints about the nature of our relationship. And it's very clear that at some point it's all going to come to a head.
Yeah, it's very much like the old school playground scene where it's like someone's pulling your hair. Oh, that's because he likes you. That's kind of the feel that you get with their relationship. They kind of both pick at each other and pick at each other. But once you get into their solo music, you find what they're really feeling about their pen pal, which you know as the audience is what they feel about each other. So I feel like the solos are where you get the intimate knowledge of each of the characters, and like the duets and the dialogue with each other is kind of like almost a facade, and you kind of break it down throughout the show.
It is a sweet show, but it's not saccharine. I mean, it's so honest and it's so earnest. And everyone knows what it's like to have their heart broken. Everyone knows what it's like to be in dread, worrying about a date that they're going to have that night and wondering how they're going to stick their foot in their mouth, you know, and chastise themselves for falling for the wrong, you know, guy or girl. And each one of the characters longs for something that's so relatable, and it's really believable and earnest and honest.
This is a scene inside the Marichek Parfumery. They just found out that they have to stay late to do Christmas decorations. However, Amalia and George both have a previous appointment, which is meeting each other for the first time as pen pals. Amalia and George are arguing right now because George just told Amalia that she has to stay. He's not staying, and they're just going to get angry with each other. I have a date. You know I have a date.
I know no such thing.
How can you say that? Why do you think I'm wearing all these new clothes? To trim a tree in?
I'm only following Mr. Marichek's instructions.
Well, I can't stay.
You are not being very cooperative, Miss Balish.
Well, why did he have to pick this one night? Or did you pick it, Mr. Novak, because you knew I had an appointment?
Tell us a little bit about your backgrounds. This is not your first production with Summer Lyric Theater.
I've been performing with Summer Lyric since 1995. I was a little workhouse boy in Oliver. I played the Baker in Into the Woods, which is one of my favorites, and Jersey Chaperone's another one that I did.
I've been with Summer Lyric at Tulane since 2008. I performed in Oklahoma. I was actually in Into the Woods with Rich. I was Rapunzel. And then I did Fantine and Les Mis about 5 years ago. So I've been away. I'm one of the Victory Bells at the World War II Museum. So I did that for a little while. And now I'm back with Tulane. It's great.
This is a feel-good musical. What are you hoping audiences will remember most?
It has a roller coaster of emotions in it that I think that everyone can relate to. I think the relatability of it is the thing that's going to really hit home with everyone.
They're also going to walk away just impressed by the score. The score is so beautiful and so luscious, and I think it will surprise a lot of people that maybe they hadn't heard the songs before.
I hope that this is one of those shows that they just keep in their hearts 10 years from now. 20 years from now. It just speaks to all of us in different ways.
Artistic director Michael McKelvey and cast members Richard Arnold and Dodie Piper, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Knowing that she loves me. She loves me. True, she does.
Summer Lyric Theater at Tulane presents She Loves Me, with music by Jerry Brock, lyrics by Sheldon Harnick, and book by Joe Masteroff. Performances run July 11th through 14th in Tulane's Dixon Hall. More info is online at summerlyric.tulane.edu. Big Easy award-winning actress, Broadway and screen veteran Leslie Castet is returning to the New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane with her original hit cabaret show, The Food of Love. It's subtitled The Broad, The Ballad, and The Bard, and it features music inspired by Shakespeare. Leslie Castet is here. Welcome back.
Hi, how are you?
What a novel idea. This show has played to sold-out crowds. What is your response to its reception?
I am delighted with its reception. A lot of people just seem to know a couple of adaptations in the music world, the Broadway world, jazz world from Shakespeare. But once you dig in, there are so many influences of Shakespeare on music. And especially I focus the show on music of the last century, basically. If I started with opera and ballet and symphony, you know, we'd be there all night. So I stick to the Great American Songbook, Broadway, jazz, pop. It's a lot of fun.
How did the idea for this come about?
So last year was the Shakespeare Fest's 25th anniversary, and Claire Moncrief, the artistic director, wanted to do, you know, some little extra add-ons to celebrate. And she had the brainstorm of doing something with music. So we got together, we started thinking about how we would do this, and she was so lovely, and she sort of gave me free rein. you know, we had a lot of strange ideas. And then it started to gel into this lovely evening where the Shakespearean text informs a lot of the music that you hear in the show. For example, West Side Story is an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. I don't just stick to, you know, Romeo and Juliet's influence on that. It's sort of loose, and I use it as a sort of kicking off point inspiration for certain themes and characters that inspire maybe other songs. So I bring in some other songs that aren't directly influenced by Shakespeare in the show as well.
For example?
When I talk about Shakespearean witchcraft and spells and magic, which there's so much of in Shakespeare, I end up singing Screamin' Jay Hawkins, I Put a Spell on You. So, which is a surprise. I don't think Screamin' Jay Hawkins ever thought that he'd be in a Shakespearean-themed work, but there he is.
I'll bet he didn't either. So what genres are covered?
We have some jazz. Two great jazz tunes written by John Dankworth, wrote it for his wife Cleo Lane, and they're taken with direct text from Shakespearean sonnets and songs in his works. So I do a couple of those. I do If Music Be the Food of Love, the title track from Twelfth Night, and another song from Twelfth Night, Oh Mistress Mine. Beautiful songs that you probably haven't heard of because I don't even think a recording exists, but I was able to source some obscure music to it, which is fun. We do some Duke Ellington because there's a genre called jukebox musicals that seem to be very popular using Shakespearean plot lines. So you have Play On, which was a Broadway musical back in the 80s using the Duke Ellington songbook based on the play Twelfth Night. So we use a lot of those kind of shows. There's an Elvis Presley song in the show. There's a lot from Kiss Me Kate, which is, of course, Cole Porter's adaptation of The Taming of the Shrew, West Side Story, of course, and Boys from Syracuse, which is Rodgers and Hart's adaptation of The Comedy of Errors.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to put all of this together?
I think I started brainstorming around January, you know, just culling songs that I liked, you know, the low-hanging fruit, the easy ones, all my favorite songs from all the songbook. And then I started digging a little further into pop songs. You know, Elton John has a few great songs based with Shakespearean references, influences, Sting, Elvis Costello, a lot of things in there. And there are a couple of more contemporary musicals that we take a couple of songs from that are a surprise. I do have a guest star who appears two-thirds into the show, and he mixes things up a lot, and it's played by Clint Johnson. So we do a lot of fun stuff together when he arrives.
Now, are you guys telling a story in between the musical works?
It's not so much a story, but it's just sort of thematic and mood-like. I talk about my intimidation that I had, my fear of Shakespeare, really, as a musician, as a musical theater actor. I never really had the training to do Shakespeare. But the more I got to looking at all the works and the songs and everything, Shakespeare's music, and music is Shakespeare. You know, the lyrics, the poetry of the language just loans itself so naturally to song and to music that I think by the end of the show, I feel a little more emboldened. You do hear me do some speeches from Shakespeare. For instance, I do a little Juliet before Kiss Me Kate, and I do a little Romeo before West Side Story.
Can we hear some of that?
Oh, I knew you'd ask. Juliet reminds me of Lily Vanessi from Kiss Me Kate. When she falls in love, she feels like a teenager all over again, just like Juliet. And she says, and when he shall die, take him and cut him out in little stars, and he will make the face of heaven so fine that all the world will be in love with night and pay no worship to the garish sun. And it's a perfect intro into the song, So In Love. She talks about the stars. When the stars fill the sky, so in love with you am I. I mean, my Lord, that was made for each other.
And who are you accompanied by?
We have Jefferson Turner at the piano, wonderful collaborator, music director of mine. He has been so helpful in arranging the songs and making them work and flow musically. We do a lot of things that are little mashups, so it's a lot of fun. It's surprising.
And will audiences appreciate the works of the Bard in a different way after this experience?
I hope so. What I did not want the show to be was a lecture demonstration. I like to try to work it together organically. So I might not say, this speech is from Romeo and Juliet, but I would say, this character feels like a teenager like Juliet. And then we go into the speech. And we have speeches in the middle of songs. A couple of lines in Richard II flow into a song I do from Lion King, believe it or not, you know, which Lion King uses plot points based on Hamlet.
You are all over the musical songbook.
I am all over it. It's wild and eclectic and fun and surprising. It's just a fun evening.
Broadway and screen veteran Leslie Castan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Leslie Castan will reprise her original Shakespearean cabaret show, The Food of Love, The Broad, The Ballad, and The Bard, at the New Orleans Shakespeare Festival in Tulane's Lupin Theater. There will be two Sunday performances, July 14th and 21st. More info is online at neworleansshakespeare.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Clowns are turning frowns in another direction with the kickoff of Prescription Joy's first original theatrical production. It's called Clean Squad, an antiseptic adventure. Prescription Joy is a healthcare clowning organization that uses humor as a therapeutic approach to connect with and help hospitalized kids and their families heal. Prescription Joy co-founders Becca Chapman and Alex Smith are here. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much, Diane. It's so cool to be here.
This is a new adventure for you. Tell me, what is Prescription Joy and how do you go about bringing happiness to young hospital patients?
So we are a pair of healthcare clowns that go into New Orleans Children's Hospital and Ochsner's Hospital for Children. We go room to room with patients and we transform an environment that is sometimes stressful or scary or sometimes not active and turn it into one of human connection and laughter using the tool of character.
So we have a pair of our healthcare clowns are named Joe and Joe. I play Joe with a J.
Joe with a G.
As Rebecca's character is. We're a pair of janitor clowns. So we go around with this big cleaning cart full of kind of wacky things and also some normal cleaning things. And we use that as a great excuse to travel throughout the hospital. The really cool thing about our characters being janitors is they have access to the entire hospital. They're supposed to be everywhere. And so a great excuse for us to walk into a lobby or barge into someone's office or go into a room once we're invited, of course, is, you know, oh, we're here to clean. And then, of course, we do either a very bad job of cleaning or we don't clean at all and we end up playing a game with the family and the kid that's there or hanging out with them. I would say that over half of our interactions aren't even going in and being floppy and silly. It's just, oh, you have a Spider-Man shirt. Let's talk about Spider-Man. Or, oh, I love Fortnite. I can't play it worth anything, but show me how to play it. And it's just conversation about whatever anybody wants to talk about or do. We spend a lot more time, as Becca always says, being there about the person, not about their ailment. Becca coined a phrase that I really like. We treat the healthy part of the patient. Our clowns, Joe and Joe, don't know what's wrong, don't really care. We're just here just like, hi there, what's up today? Let's talk about that. Or let's, here, we're going to show you a really bad magic trick. Is it good? Or, you know, I can't figure out how this door opens. Can you help me?
So why do you think laughter and play work?
Everyone else that comes into that room is either there for a part of their care. They're there to stick them with a needle or adjust machines or do something that might make them uncomfortable or, you know, administer medicine that might make them feel better. They're there for the patient and they're there to help, but it's always assumed that here it comes. I don't have control over what's about to happen. When we come in, they're the boss. We ask permission to come in. If we get a no is a yes in the other direction. A no is a, I don't need that right now. So it's like, great, goodbye. Here's a parting trick. Off we go. And I think that a big part of it that we discovered, the whole point is they're the boss. The family is the boss. The kids are the boss. We are there to yes and, as it is, which is, you know, an improvisational theater term, to yes and whatever they want to do. If they want to turn us into unicorns, great. Let me go get the plunger and stick it to my head. I'm a unicorn now. If they want to teach us ballet, that sounds great. If they just want to be quiet and have us hang out and watch whatever's on the TV with them, that's what it is. And I think that's shown some really interesting transformations in some of these kiddos that we get to see again and again of, you know, oh, Joe and Joe are here. Let's do this. It's like, yes, let's do this. You're in charge, buddy, whatever we want to do. And it's always turned out to be fun and interesting. And I think we get surprised every visit.
And now these visits have turned into an original play, a scripted work, Clean Squad, an antiseptic adventure. Tell us about it.
Oh, Clean Squad is great. So Becca and I have been writing plays together for a while now.
A few years.
And we realized that one of the other avenues that we can reach folks in hospitals and abroad is through a play. Because everything we do with Joe and Joe is unscripted. We have a couple of bits, but
we wanted to make theater accessible for everyone. And we feel like when kids are out in the community saying, oh, I saw live theater, we would like children in these institutions to say, yes, me too.
It's a cautionary tale. It's got a moral to it. It's about hand washing and keeping yourself clean. The plot, very loosely, is a spray bottle, a bottle of detergent, and old Uncle Sponge are all facing off against an evil germ. It's their adventure with battling the germ. We've got an excerpt right here. To set the scene a little bit, Uncle Sponge has just woken up from a nap. The crowd has actually helped wake him up with a volume game where they're his alarm clock. And so he's just woken up and is karate chopping his way across the stage as he doesn't quite know what has just happened. And we'll hear spray bottle and detergent calm him down, and then Uncle Sponge will come in.
Whoa there, old timer.
Calm down, it's just us. Yes, I knew that. You don't need to scream so loudly. I felt like I was back in the sink trenches, scrubbing for my life while the old flu mutation 24601 was advancing hard on the bathroom front.
Sorry, we need to assemble so we can figure out how to stop the germ. It seems like it's really trying something big, and as we know, we can't let even a single molecule of that evil germ get into a person.
That's right. We need to clean the floors, walls, ceilings, handles, and everything we can so the germ has nowhere to grow. In a traditional panto, which is what the play is in the style of, the evil germ is creeping behind the clean squad as they're talking about what their plans are. And the kids in the audience and adults and anyone in the audience are like, he's right behind you. And of course, they'll turn around and the germ is gone. And then they're like, I don't think there was anybody behind them. And the germ crosses again, right behind you. So it has a lot of really fun call and response portions of the play. And the crowd actually helps solve the puzzle and save the day. Everybody gets to be a part of it.
Who else is in the sanitation crew?
We have Zandra Howard playing Spray Bottle, Philip Yvanopoulos playing Uncle Sponge, and Leland Ensminger as the Mighty Detergent, and the Evil Germ, performed by Helen Jacks,
who is Malcontentist Nastyopoulos.
This is guaranteed to bring smiles to children's faces.
Oh, we saw rehearsal last night. It was absolutely hilarious.
Our rehearsal process has just been so much fun. I can't tell you how many rehearsals just completely broke down into hysterics as we're like, wait. And so many things that we weren't predicting when we wrote it. It's a 20-minute play, but you get to see everybody flex their really great abilities in the piece.
Prescription Joy co-founders Becca Chapman and Alex Smith, thanks for stopping by.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure, as always.
Save the date. Public performances of Prescription Joy's original play, Clean Squad, An Antiseptic Adventure, will be held at Trinity Episcopal School, 1315 Jackson Avenue, Friday, July 19th at 7 p.m. and Saturday, July 20th at 2 p.m. More info is online at prescriptionjoy.org. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.